I think that there's a lot of work to be done in larger corporations across the board to have more diversity in boards, because that, for me, is the most important thing. People are not going to green light hiring anybody at a diverse board. People are not going to advocate for creating content that serves niche communities. People are just not going to see the worth of being able to support folks that speak different types of languages. People are not going to do it because they don't see the value of it, because they're so far removed from the actual people who are in the nitty-gritty doing the things, right?
I'm Agent Scott, and I'm Cam the Provocateur, and we're from the Spy Hards podcast. Every week, we decode classic spy cinema.
That's right. From Bond to Bourne to Powers to Palmer, we're tracking all of your favorite big screen spies in all of their major exciting adventures.
So thank you for joining Jeff, aka the podcast father, on this journey sharing great things content creators are doing. He's the indie podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. One of us, three artists. You've come to my place. Indie podcaster with your host, the podcast father.
All right, all right, all right. Oh, man, I love saying that. It's my inner Matthew McConaughey. I'm not quite as good looking as him, though. I do have a face for radio, probably. I'm not sure. I'm just going to go along with that. Anyway, welcome to Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff Townsend, a.k.a. the Indie Podcast Father. You know, I catch a lot of crap for that, you know, saying that term, podcast father. It's probably the most misunderstood thing that I say, because people just sometimes don't take the time to hear where I'm coming from when I say that. To me, it's not about being the best podcaster, because I am by no means that. Just listen to me, dang it. But what it does mean is I have a passion and really care about helping independent content creators. This is going to be another awesome episode where I'm going to share an awesome conversation where I do just that. I actually got to speak to a Grammy-winning artist, musician, Domine Brichon. This was awesome, because actually the team at Oaktown Soul reached out to me asking if I'd be interested in chatting with Domine. And they sent me a link to her music, and I listened to it, and I was like, oh, yeah, absolutely. This is amazing. Her album dropped last week, the EP Nothing Personal. I say like EP, like it really trips me out because I'm old school and I can just think of like album dropping. But no, nevertheless, I checked out the song Red Flags and I was just blown away. So I was thinking, I got to get her on here and chat with her. This is going to be amazing. I can't wait to share this with you guys. So I've been excited about this all week. I don't want to hold up too much longer, but I do want to remind you that if you're interested in being on an episode of Podcast Garage, you know, to get your podcast to tune up. If you have some things you want to ask about and improve, don't be afraid to go onto the website at podcastgarage.fm and fill out the form and you know, give it a shot. That podcast has been going really well and it's been awesome. All right, I don't want to hold up any more time. I'm excited about this conversation that I have with Domine. I want to get to sharing it with you right away. But I do, of course, have the few housekeeping things that I got to take care of. And as you know, I call it the business. Yeah, that's right. I said it. The business. Seriously, this podcast would not exist if it wasn't for the awesome love that you guys show me in the content creator community. If you're not in contact with me and you would like to be, or you'd like to be featured on this podcast, you can go about this in a couple different ways. If you just want to chat with me, hit me up on Twitter at podcast_father. Hit up my website, podcastfather.com. There you will also find a form that you can fill out to be featured on this very podcast. If you really love what I'm doing, you know, I just would love it if you subscribe to this podcast. If you'd hit up some of the Patreon, buy me a coffee, PayPal options at podcastfather.com. You can leave me a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. I'd be thankful. I'd love you. I'd appreciate it. I'm going to share some sponsors with you. They do help me keep making this podcast, but more importantly, these are great tools that independent podcasters should be using. PodPage. You can build a beautiful podcast website literally in less than 5 minutes, guys. It's amazing. It uses your RSS feed and it automatically creates all of this. You can customize it and do all the different things you want to do. There's all sorts of different packages. You've got to have a website if you're a podcaster or content creator, you have to go to podpage.com, use my code FATHER. This will get you $20 off any pro package. One of the big challenges for new podcasters is marketing your podcast. Do you need help doing that? Well, I've got the solution for you. My friends at PodSpike make marketing your podcast easy, affordable, and effective. They work with you. They pull the legwork. They connect you with all these different resources that you get to choose from. Go to podspike.com. Use the code IndiePodcaster. You'll get $20 off your first month of a pro membership. As a podcaster, it's very important to make sure you got a transcript going on for all your episodes. It really is. And my friends at Podden have the ultimate tools to do that. Make your podcast to eye-catching transcript with ease. You really need to get to it. Go to podden.io. All right, let's get into this conversation, which happens to be powered by Riverside.fm. Domine, I am super excited to talk to you this evening. We got linked up because you're doing some pretty cool things, and I'm excited to share your story and all the great things that you're doing. So thanks for taking the time to chat with me.
Likewise, I'm happy to be here.
Happy to be here, even though old Jeff took her through the ringer on trying to get this recording started.
You know, sometimes technology has a mind of its own. It's okay.
I do want to give you a few minutes to introduce yourself and what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. My name is Domine Brashan. I am an artist out of Oakland, California. I'm from Oakland, and I recently stepped into independent artistry myself. So I am a singer, a songwriter, vocal producer, arranger, all of the things. But I have a project that's actually dropping tomorrow, my first debut EP called Nothing Personal. I've released two singles before then. One just dropped about a month ago called Red Flags, and it's been doing really well. I'm also involved with like a lot of other music corporations, music things. I've been a singer my entire life. My family is full of musicians. I went to school for it. So yeah.
That's like super short and sweet to the point, but there's a lot more.
There's so much more.
Well, I guess that was a good quick summary. We'll dive into it some more. But like you said, you've got something, you're dropping the, do people still say out? Like the terminology's changed on me. It's changed on me here, dang it.
You can say album, yeah.
It sounds cool. Like takes me back to the day, you know, like her album's dropping tomorrow. Here we go. When I did a little bit of radio. So that's what I'm going to say for the sake of this interview. Your album drops tomorrow. How cool is that?
It's very cool. It's very exciting. Just because I've been working on music, like I said, my own music for the past 2 years, and really just like stepping out and like, okay, well, I've been working on everybody else's projects. I've been singing backgrounds. I do this, that, and third. What about me? You know, so I'm very excited for it to finally be coming out, because then once it's out, people can listen to it and I can put more music out that I've been working on. So it's a very, very exhilarating feeling.
That's awesome. And we'll go through it, but like, you've kind of gone through the ranks in the sense of that you're a part of a Grammy award-winning group, correct?
Yes.
So you're kind of like, I don't want to say branching out, like, because that sounds like you're not going to ever do anything again, you know, with a group.
Yeah.
But that's actually pretty common in that industry, right? Start out like in that setting and then kind of like branch out.
Yeah, very much so. So once a Fisk Jubilee singer, always a Fisk Jubilee singer. But specifically when I was in college, I was a traveling singer. I attended Fisk University, hence the Fisk Jubilee Singers, the name. And we traveled all over the world. The UK, they've been to Africa before, just different things. It's a group of 16 individuals, 4 on each part, usually 2 on each part, really, because it's like split. If you know what the SATB, soprano, alto, tenor, bass, there's like 2 first altos, 2 second altos, things like that. But we recorded in my final year, my senior year, actually, we did a show at the historic Ryman Theater that featured bigger names like Cece Winans, who was a huge, probably actually Grammy nominated, Grammy award winning artist as well in the gospel realm. I can't remember everyone's name at this moment, but we performed at the Ryman Theater, and the recording was really for archival purposes. But the 150th year of the Fisk Jubilee Singers and their existence came up. And so they created a celebratory album, and that album ended up being nominated for a Grammy, and then it ended up winning the Grammy. So it was very exciting. You know, they contacted majority of us and we got to do some like video works, but all of us, I graduated. So it was something that was very unexpected, but I have my Grammy certificate with the emblem and things like that. It was very exciting.
I do want to get into that some more just because like we'll get there, but I'm trying to like wrap my head around like being a college age person and winning that. That's super cool.
Yeah.
Kind of going back to the beginning, like, how did you get so passionate about the being an artist, you're about singing. A lot of times people, like, it's in their family, right? Like, it's a lot of the times people have a really good support system. Sometimes they don't. But I kind of want to hear about how you got into it.
Yeah, definitely family and church. So my mom is also a musician. She's a recording artist herself. And my family, I have, if you don't sing, you play an instrument or you do both. So my whole family full of musicians. But growing up in church, actually, I grew up in a Pentecostal church, which is your typical Black church, if you will.
Gotcha.
And yeah, so my mom was a praise and worship leader. And praise and worship, you know, you enter in all those things, but she opened up the service for everyone with her voice. So I grew up watching her, and that's kind of how I learned how to, you know, sing in the background. She would have me sing with her sometimes. And because of her, I learned how to learn every part, you know, how to assign parts, how to detect which part goes where. And then also just the musicians at church, listening to just how music needed to flow, you know, how there's a different sound for every moment. And then from there, I was always in choir in school, anywhere, elementary school, middle school, high school. Actually, when I was going into high school, my eighth grade year, I actually started going to Oakland School for the Arts, which is a performing arts high school out here in Oakland, California. Some famous names that have gone there. It was like Kehlani, you know, Zendaya, Adrian Marcel, people like that, and Jane Hancock. So that's really where my formal training began, because my emphasis was vocal music. So I went to school in the mornings to do academic studies and things of that sort. And then after lunch, we went straight into our emphasis. And for me, that was vocal. So I was taking theory classes. I was learning the difference between, like, your solo repertoire, where you in the, how do you sing musical theater songs? You know, how do you perform them? How do you write lyrics, songwriting courses, how to sing in an ensemble, what's your part, how to blend, you know, that was the beginning foundation. And then from there, I went to Fisk University, which is not a performing arts college or an arts college, but you wouldn't know that because everybody at Fisk can sing or can play an instrument or anything. And I got involved with every ensemble I could. I was in the university choir. Within 1 year of being there, my sophomore year, I became the director of the Fisk Women's Group. And then I joined the Fisk Jubilee Singers. So I was literally singing every single day in rehearsals. I had shows, we traveled. And I was also a music and vocal performance minor. So yes, singing for fun, taking these classes, but I also was, you know, continued my formal training. So juries, more theory classes, diving deeper into, like, repertoire, having vocal lessons each and every day, working on arias and learning jazz and classical. So yeah.
That's awesome. Besides your mom, you had to have some pretty, I'm trying to think how to word it, inspirational teachers along the way.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Tell us about them.
Let's see. There are a few that come off at the top. So Kava Menzies, for sure, one of them. She was my teacher when I was in high school, still a teacher to me now. And it's so funny how that transition happened, because I go from calling her like, hey, Miss Menzies. And she's like, you're an adult now, girl. I am Kava to you. But she taught me so much just about what musicianship was, you know, and how to mesh, like, your passion, your love, and your work ethic. Because a lot of times people don't understand how hard it is to actually be a musician or to be a vocalist, or the fact that vocalists are musicians too. You know, we don't necessarily always get that title, because a lot of vocalists don't play instruments. And so that she taught me how to, like, no, you're a musician in that too, or how to be a producer, you know. Also, Dr. Paul T. Kwame, he was the director of the Fisk Jubilee Singers, saved my life plenty of times, but he taught lessons about life, you know, and he taught us how to blend well, mesh well. But really, In college, you always go through something. You always go through something in life in general, but you find yourself. So he was a teacher and a director, but he was a father figure to a lot of us. There are so many. There's Dr. Duke, also from college, who was just a hardcore person. If you didn't know your notes, he would literally, okay, one on the part, we're going to stand up. He would one on the part each time, everybody stand up, and we're going to sing this song. And I'm embarrassed whoever didn't know their part because you were talking in my classroom, you know, things like that. And then I also just had great mentors. One of my mentors, Miss Regina Jackson, she's the reason I went to college for a lot of things. You know, she's always motivated me for anything that I did, whether it was in the arts or in education. Yeah, there's so many other names that I could think of that I'm just blanking on. Even now, like, since becoming an artist, you know, the folks that I work with, they kind of helped me implement, like, the same way vocalists are musicians, like, hey, you can be a producer too. I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know that me arranging my own songs was producing. So I credit that to people like Sean Finn and Clay Xavier of Oaktown Soul, you know? So I have many teachers and mentors.
There's nothing wrong with that. So I guess, like, what I'm trying to establish that, like, a really good support system, which is awesome because not everybody has that, you know? So, like,
yeah,
what can we do? It's something that we can all be really thankful of. But even if they don't have that, like, at home, usually along the way somewhere, they will have somebody, whether it be a teacher, link up with somebody that makes a huge impact in their life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So the Fisk University, so that was local, correct? You said, right?
It was, no, Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, because you're from Oakland. Oh, so
yeah.
I'm really confused now. How did you not go to a college that was like, I don't know, like art school? You said you didn't. You mentioned that. Like, what linked you up here in Nashville? Like, that's
right.
That's far away.
It is far away. I always wanted to go to a HBCU, a historically Black college. So I knew I wasn't going to be in California.
Did you want to get away from California too?
I did.
Okay.
I definitely did.
So I understand.
Yeah. And my mom knew. So she was like, go for it. You know, and I'm a first generation graduate. My parents did go to college, but they did not finish. So my mom was just all for me doing what I needed to do to make sure I got that degree. And my dad too. My dad is Nigerian. I'm a first generation Nigerian American as well. And if you know anything about Nigerian parents, top three priorities is God, education, and family, literally. And they're not in order. It could be interchangeable. So the degree was what my parents were focused on. Where didn't really matter to them. And I applied to several universities and institutions all across the South, East Coast things. I just knew I wanted to go to HBCU. And it worked out that the representative at the time was the vice president at Fisk. And he actually came and gave a personal presentation to one of the other college programs that I was a part of in high school. And then I went on a college tour and I got to see Fisk. And Fiskites always have this thing where we say, like, I didn't choose Fisk, Fisk chose me. Some people did choose Fisk, but I am the former. Fisk definitely chose me. I had my payment sent to another institution. It just worked out at that moment that, like, Fisk gave me more scholarship money. And my mom is a single parent, you know, I had the grades, but it was just like, okay, well, we have to go where we're going to make sure we're not too much in debt. And so I went to Fisk, but that's where I needed to be. I'm super glad that it worked out that way because, I mean, look what happened, you know? But yeah, no, Fisk is located in Nashville, Tennessee. I wanted to leave home.
You have probably heard of promo swaps with other podcasters, but have you heard of feed drops? Feed drops are when one podcaster plays an entire episode of another podcast. The idea is for the listeners of the show to experience an entire episode before they decide if they want to subscribe. I'm going to tell you what, this is way more effective than promo swaps, and I have the perfect person that can do this for you. My good friend Greg at Indie Drop-In Network. Indie Drop-In Network is a network built around feed drops. You submit an episode, and if approved, it appears on one of Indie Drop-In's shows with all your contact details in front of established audience. Best of all, it's free. So if you are a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider doing this. I've done it, and I can tell you it does work. What the hell are you waiting for? I should probably tell you how to do it. Maybe that's what you're waiting for. Go to indiedropin.com/creators. I'll say it again. Go to indiedropin.com/creators. You damn right. Dang, that felt good. And if I'm going to ask you something that's going to, like, make you uncomfortable, just say, Jeff, you know, screw off and I'll edit it out.
No, you're all good.
Your mom's a single parent. You just got done saying that, you know, from the culture that you're raised in, family, God. So is your father alive or the divorce? Like, divorcing kind of seems like it would be the, it'd be different than that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, my parents are both alive, thank God, but they are divorced. They divorced when I was young. They divorced when I was 8. I always say, it's my personal belief that they got together. Their sole purpose of being together was me. Because as I'm getting older, you know, you learn more about your parents and their stories. And me and my dad were kind of estranged for the longest. You know, I still, to this day, I haven't seen him since I was 8 years old when their divorce was final. And he lives in Nigeria now. We talk on the phone, you know, there's video chat and things like that. But we kind of started rebuilding our relationship while I was in college. So that's been interesting, you know, because it's one of those things where it's like, this is a huge part of me and I don't know it. But when I go out, because my last name is actually Ezechukwu. My artist name is Dominique Brashan, but my full name, the second half of it is all Nigerian. So when people see my name, they are like, oh, and I'm like, I actually don't speak the language, you know, or I know certain things, but it's because I took it upon myself to learn them. My father didn't get a chance to teach me or take it upon himself to teach me. So yeah, it's interesting to know that like these are his top three priorities and your daughter wasn't necessarily incorporated into that. I honestly, there's still some things I'm learning about my dad and like the decisions that he made. And it's been a process. It's been a journey. It's just how people say like five stages of grief. Like we grieve relationships too. And it's actually, one of the songs on the EP is called Frustrated Love. And it's about my dad. So listen to it. I probably shouldn't have gave that away, but listen to it. And you'll hear in the end that like there's a process to which he and I's relationship has existed, is existing.
To me, and like why this podcast means a lot to me and why it's special, it's because I learned a lot about things through a story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like when I ask you those questions, it's because I feel like the people listening, a lot of the times you can take a lot more away from the story rather than like, I did this by doing this step.
Exactly.
Sometimes the story is way more beneficial and powerful. I do want to go back to your mom. You said she was a minister at church.
Yes. So praise and worship leader. She has been a missionary, is a minister now. So very heavy in the church world. And that's just her upbringing too. We have a family church that she grew up in. And then the church I grew up in, I don't know when she transitioned into that, becoming a member at that church, but that's the church that I grew up in and I know. And she was a praise and worship leader all the time I was there up until I left for college. So yeah.
Let's think about that for a minute. Pentecostal, you said.
Yes.
Your mom must be such a wonderful, influential, good person. She's a divorced single mother in a Pentecostal church in a role like that. And I'm not even joking. Like, I know it sounds kind of like funny the way I'm saying it, but like that has to speak to how influential she is as a person.
Absolutely. Someone once asked me, like, when you think of the word sacrifice, what do you think of? And I just started crying and I was like, my mom. Because, you know, she comes from a big family. She's the youngest of six. Technically, there are eight because my grandmother adopted two younger people, but the youngest of six. And she grew up in the 60s, so in Oakland. So her life, her upbringing was far different than what she gave to me. So my mom, she hustled, you know, she did what she had to do to ensure that her daughter had a better life, you know, but she definitely enjoyed her life. I do know that. And like, we enjoy our family, but she's given up so much for me, even her career. Like, she was in school. I remember asking her one time, she was like, no, I was in school. And then I just started making money, you know? And then she was like, when I had you, things changed. She was still touring when she had me. I think like one of my first trips, I was maybe like one or two, and I was in New York on somebody else's hip while she was on stage singing, you know? So yeah, she powerful. And as a Black woman too, powerful.
Yeah, no, it sounds like, and I can see by the smile on your face and the emotion that I can see your body language and everything, like that definitely resonates. And that's certainly the case.
Oh, for sure.
That's awesome. So no, a lot of us have things like that, that help make us who we are. So it's important to share and embrace those stories because sometimes they're not always like something that we want to publicly talk about.
Yeah.
But there could be somebody listening that's like, you know, well, I was in a similar situation, or maybe I can relate to that.
Yeah.
We all draw inspiration from different things. So I really appreciate you sharing something private with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking.
Tennessee, you go clear across the country to Nashville, Tennessee, which is, I've been to both places where you're from in here. They're nothing alike.
No.
So talk to us about that. What was that like? Did you travel a lot as a kid, or was this your first time really away?
No, I did travel. My family loves to travel. Yeah, no. So I actually am privileged in that way that my family could afford for us to go on family trips outside of the states, you know, outside of the country, because I know not everybody had that privilege. So I did have that opportunity to travel. Oakland and Nashville, culture shock completely. Not just in one way, you'd like the weather itself, you know, you're going to the south. So you're getting heat and humidity, you know, like out here when it's hot.
Humid as hell. Yep.
Oh my God. We have dry heat, you know, and then living in the Bay Area, there's always a breeze even when it's hot. So I'm okay. But out there, Oh my goodness. I was like, this is unbearable, but you experience every season. So I had to deal with like extreme cold. You know, the South, people like to think it doesn't snow in the South, but it does. It's rare, but it actually not as rare as most people think. And the South just doesn't do well with snow. So it's not the East Coast. So it's cold. Everything shuts down. The streets are closed. So that was something to experience. The insects. There are so many bugs that I never knew existed. And it was just mind blown. But that was also a beauty in it. Like, I remember walking down, we call it the yard, Fisk, and seeing actual like lightning bugs. And I've only seen that in movies. And I was like, wait, what is that? And people from there, they're like, oh yeah, you're really not from the South. I'm like, no, I'm not. What is it? They're like, it's the lightning bug. And I was like, oh, that's dope. But aside from weather, just everyone's so nice, you know? Bay Area folk, we're not mean, but we keep to ourselves. You know, you might get a head nod if we lock eyes because it's just awkward not to say anything. But for the most part, if I don't know you, I don't have to speak to you. And it may come off standoffish, but we're really like calm, cool, and collected in the Bay Area. In the South, everyone talks to you. And then it's not even a respectful, it is out of a respect, but it's also just like, that's the culture. And then I was in Nashville, so Music City, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to a place where I don't even think I'm going to be focused on music, really. But in retrospect, I'm in the city that is called Music City, right?
What was your major?
My major was actually psychology. So I was a psych pre-med major and a music and vocal performance minor. And so, yeah, just the history in that too. Like, we have some huge civil rights people who went to FIT, like the late and great John Lewis, Representative John Lewis. He went to Fisk University. And Diane Nash, like all these names who went to Fisk, just the things that happened in Nashville in general in the South. So I'm in a new city where there's so much history in when it comes to social justice, you know, and civil rights and human rights, but also music and the curation of music and how everything in the industry passes through Nashville, even if it's not just country music, right? The food is different. The people are different. The culture is different. It was a college town for sure. And, you know, coming from the Bay Area, we have colleges, we have schools all spaced out. But it's a little different when you go to other cities to see that, like, oh, this is an actual college town. They have these midnight cafes for students to go and study in, or just different events that happen. You know, it's a ever-growing city. But yeah, the weather, the people, those are probably my two biggest, oh, I have to get accustomed to this when I first moved.
Yeah, it's completely different. I can speak for that. I've recently moved to Indiana.
Oh, wow.
And there's like a solid 100 degree temperature variance throughout the year, right? It can be over 100 degrees and it can frequently be 0 degrees.
Oh, yeah, no, I die.
It's such a huge swing. And living in Washington, the state of Washington, we did not own an air conditioner.
Oh, goodness.
And most people don't there because it doesn't get that hot.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe 70, not as humid, that's for sure. 80 was like extreme. 80 is like you're dying because you want an air conditioner. But like here and then certainly there in Nashville, like we're talking about, what's that we were at?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we went to school. You like literally have to have a freaking air conditioner.
Yes.
Or you will sweat to death. So yeah, it's big difference.
Huge.
But yeah, the earthquake, if you're ever a part of one in these states, it's like the people just freak out. They don't know what to do. But back out west, it's like every day their earthquake's more powerful than the one that they might get like once every 25 years, you know?
Right.
Anyway, we just went off on a sidebar there about the difference in culture. So what else was different about the culture there? So you're at an all-Black university. That was very important to you. You wanted to completely embrace that. And
absolutely.
You're part of a historical college. How was the culture different there as far as that goes in the city?
So my high school was predominantly Black at the time. So it wasn't like I hadn't seen Black people before. But when I went to Fisk, there were so many different types of Black people, you know, and not just Black people, just cultures. Like I remember having classmates from New Zealand, classmates from Nigeria, classmates from Iran, like all over the country. And understanding like, oh, all Black people are not Democrats, you know, or like, oh, all Black people don't necessarily consider themselves Black, you know, because where they live, they're first Nigerian or Ghanaian, or I come from a very, not proud, but like, I come from a privileged family, not me personally, but a privileged family is when like I was born into money. And though I didn't grow up in poverty, we were a middle-class family. We made do with what we had. My mom, we got through. Like I didn't personally struggle, or I didn't necessarily see the struggle that we may have been in at times. But to another family, I was living that the life of a silver spoon into my mouth, you know? But from my person, I'm like, oh, you have all of this. So just to see how different that we as a people could be, but also all come together and bond over some of the same things like education, like music, like political views, like societal views. Something else for me was seeing Black love, in my honest opinion. Like, I didn't see that often. You know, the Bay Area, California in general, love who you love. I have nothing against interracial relationships, but it's more common for interracial relationships to happen where I've seen them. Like, that's what I grew up in. But when I moved to the South, I saw so many Black people who actually wanted to be with Black people. Even me, like, I did not date until really, like, latter end of college, after college. But the interest that folks had in me was something that was brand new, because there are some societal views that we have in the Bay Area that are not, you know, not the greatest of, like, I'm a dark-skinned woman. You know, I am a dark-skinned plus-size woman. So at first glance, what I grew up with, I'm not the first person people choose. Not to say that they didn't find me beautiful or I didn't find myself beautiful, but it's just how society works, you know? And now where I am in life, I know that's not the case. I know that was just like immaturity on all of our parts. But when I went to Nashville, that wasn't a thing. And it wasn't just like Black folks who desired me. It was everybody, you know? And not even just in a romantic or a sexual way, just personality wise, you know, they were the type of people who saw you for who you were. There was no dressing up. There was no, I have to look the part to be it. Yeah, you want to look the part, but they didn't care about how you dressed. They didn't care about who you knew. It's, I care about who you are and how you're going to treat me. And I'm just grateful that my mom raised me to be a good person, because if you weren't a good person, they was going to call you out on it and chew you out about it. So when I speak to like how the culture, the difference in culture is just like, and I won't say that because I am a Bay Area person, thick and thin, through thick and thin, but I will say something the South has over us is like hospitality, you know, and really just like, they are not passive aggressive. They get straight to the point. What are you about and what do you want to do about it? And I wish a lot more of us had that mentality.
It's super fascinating that you're saying this, because for me as a privileged white person, you would almost like assume that you'd be talking about like opposite here. Like, it's the South, right? So we have all these things that we assume about the South in comparison to somewhere like the Bay Area, you know?
Right.
That's awesome of you to speak about the South like that.
Yeah.
Your outlook of it all is just incredibly positive.
Yeah, it was very positive. And like, granted, yes, everyone does have a different view of the South. But I think me personally, like you said, everybody's story is different. I grew up in the South, you know, I experienced actual womanhood when I moved out there, because it was my first time being fully on my own too, you know, and getting to make decisions on my own. And I got involved with the right people, right? And yes, I did experience some things that most say when they go to certain places, you know, but for the most part, because of who I was around and because, again, of how I portrayed myself, how I acted, I was always welcomed with gratitude, with grace, with compassion and things of that sort. And like, I got to grow up, you know, I got to step into my womanhood. I got to, you know, embrace maturity. And so my outlook about Nashville will always be my home away from home. And many of my friends had the same type of situation going on as well. Some people did not like it, though. So you're right. Every situation is different for everybody.
So you actually like have this crazy thing where you can say, like, I'm a freaking Grammy Award winning artist. Yeah. I don't want to skip over that, since we're at this point in your life, the discussion here of college. I know you talked about it a little bit earlier, but talk to us briefly about this group and how this all happened, because there's not a lot of people in the world that can say that. So that's, I'll just say that's badass, you know?
Thank you. Yeah. So again, the Fisk Jubilee Singers, that is the Fisk Jubilee Singers, world renowned group, Grammy Award winning. They are the reason Fisk is still alive today. You know, originally there were 11 singers, and Fisk was getting ready to be like closed down because of funds and things like that. And so they took it upon themselves to travel and use their voices to sing. And anybody who knows, if you major or minor in music, yes, you will study other music genres like jazz and rock, all these things, but your predominant like thing that you're focusing on is classical music. that is what most folks are trained in when you major or minor in music. So they went around the country and around the states to and overseas to sing classical music. And it is said that when they went on their first European tour to England, they were singing classical music and nobody was paying attention, right? So they decided, we're going to sing what we want to sing. And they started singing Negro spirituals. And some will say, like, I don't remember the exact song. I don't know if anybody actually knows it, though, other than those that were there. But some will put Still Away in that position. And you could hear a pin drop. Everybody tuned in. It was just like, who are these people singing? And because of that, like, there is a painting at Fisk University in the Appleton Room. The Appleton Room is just a room on campus, but it's a beautiful room. And the painting is of the original Jubilee Singers. And it was painted and paid for and sent to Fisk by Queen Elizabeth. So that's how good these original singers were. And that's just a hair of the history. But ever since then, they traveled. And, you know, these students, they gave up their education. They gave up their livelihood. Some of them died touring. So every year we actually have something called Jubilee Day. It's on October 6th. October 6th, because that's when they set out on their journey. And we celebrate Jubilee Day. The Jubilee singers go inside of the chapel on campus and they sing 2 to 3 songs to honor the Fisk Jubilee singers and all that they did for Fisk University. And we collect magnolia leaves because there are a lot of magnolia trees on campus. And those were Ella Shepherd. She was one of the predominant singers in the group. And she also directed the group alongside the main director. And so as it was said that that was one of her favorite trees or like flowers, the magnolia. So we collect magnolia leaves and they make wreaths out of the magnolia leaves. And then you go to the grave sites of some of those original singers because some of them are actually buried in Nashville. And we also sang at those grave sites. So October 6th is a huge thing for Fiskites and Jubilee singers. And the great thing about being a part of this legacy is that that is my history. When you become a Jubilee singer, because you have to audition every year. You're not guaranteed a spot. And some folks think that because you're the best singer, you automatically get in. No. And this is where character comes in. There have been singers who have been the best but did not make the ensemble because maybe they thought they had the audition in the bag and they really didn't, or maybe their character just wasn't right. Like, we sing Negro spirituals. And if you know anything about Negro spirituals, most of the time we're talking about God and life and struggle and how to overcome. And also the music is a cappella. We don't perform with a piano or with instrumentation. If we do, it's a very special occasion. And there are practices that go into it. But when we sing, those keys, those notes, everything, it's in our heads. We're not reading off of sight music. There are only 16 singers in the ensemble, which means if we have a 16-part song, which we have before, every single person is one on a part. And these aren't regular songs. You know, the arrangements are hard. They're very hard. The audition process, I think my first year auditioning, it was probably almost a month long before we had the cemented 16 singers, because then you also have to think about the blend, right? And how connected these students are to each other. Because if we're singing, I say before, like, my voice is heartfelt, you know, but if you're singing songs that are supposed to bring inspiration and promote power, you need to be connected to the person that's singing right next to you. And I even remember there was a time when we were not a cohesive unit. And Dr. Kwame, he would say, like, y'all figure it out, get it together. And ironically, it was right before we were going to England for the second time. So I was lucky enough and privileged enough to be a part of that group who went on the second journey to England for the first time since they went years ago in the 1800s.
Oh, wow. What year was this when you went?
2015 is when I went.
You're making me feel old.
Hey, listener, are you a podcaster or content creator? Well, you've got to hear this. I'm going to talk to you about Riverside.fm. I use Riverside to record all my interviews for this podcast. I absolutely love it. Super simple to use, and I get the audio quality of an actual recording studio. You can have video resolution up to 4K, uncompressed crystal clear audio, and continuous file uploading throughout your recording. I've used a lot of different things to record this podcast, and I'll be honest with you, some of them were just way more complicated than they needed to be. That will not be an issue with Riverside FM. It is super simple, and with that, you still have the quality audio, which is very critical. The support team is great and always available to assist you with any questions that you may have. Damn it, I'm serious when I say this. Riverside FM is the ultimate great recording solution for podcasters and content creators. Go online right now and check it out. You can do a free trial and give it a shot. I guarantee afterwards you will be so happy with it. You'll be looking through all the different packages and you will find one that meets your needs. Legitimize the content you are recording and creating. Go to riverside.fm right now to get started.
But yeah, so the ensemble is anybody who can say that they've been a part of the Jubilee legacy, even to just be a Fiskite and not be, just to know what Jubilee is, what it means to people. The first time I heard them sing before, it was my freshman year at the Jubilee Convocation, and I got chills. I was so in awe because I'm a singer, I'm a musician. I've heard great singers before. You know, some of the songs that they sang already, I've learned and I've had to sing. But there was just something so different about the presence of each of those students and the command that their voices had over everyone in the room. And that's something that is curated year and year again. I was only in Jubilee for 2 years because I was scared to audition my first 2 years in college. So I didn't audition until my junior year. And thankfully, I was good enough to get in both times, you know, and eventually become one of the alto section leaders. Yeah, that's Jubilee as an ensemble, as the work of art that it is, and just learning how to really, like, you have to be open, transparent, and honest when you're singing music like that.
Sounds like a lifestyle.
Absolutely. Because you're learning.
It's being a part of something way bigger than yourself. It's a lifestyle.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of weight that you carry, and good weight, you know. I don't take it for granted, but I think light of it and that experience. And it's so funny when some of my former classmates, like, we all get together and just like, man, like, what we give to be in Jubilee again. And we got paid too. That's one other, as a Jubilee singer, if we were outside of Nashville, we got paid. We had to dress a certain way. You're the face of the school. You are still raising money for the school, but also you're using your talent and your gift to bring healing. Really, it was very much so a privilege. Very honored.
Do you remember the day that you won this Grammy Award?
Oh, I don't remember the exact day, but I do remember how I felt. It was in, was it in 2021? Because I think we were nominated in 2020 because it was the 63rd and they got pushed back. So
okay.
I remember getting a text message from one of my best friends. We were in Jubilee together. And I honestly, when we first got nominated, I didn't know. I had to see it on Twitter or like social media from just Fiskites all around. And my picture was a part of it. It was the current Jubilee singers, but it was also one of our old pictures at the Ryman Auditorium. But then when we won, I may have been at work. I don't know, but I wasn't by my phone and I looked at it and in all caps. And you know how like iPhones have these features where you can like shape messages or something like that. And it was just like, we won, Dom. And I was like, what is she talking about? We won. And so I opened the message and I look at it. So I'm immediately going to like all social media outlets and I'm like running at the time. I called my partner at the time and I was just like, we won. And I was screaming. I was very excited because I don't know, for a lot of people, winning a Grammy is a dream, you know, a lot of artists. And to say like, I was just now stepping into my artistry. I don't even think I had dropped a single yet. I was still just doing backgrounds here and there. And for a minute, it took me a really long time to own it. Honestly, like, and when anybody says like, oh, you want a Grammy? I always just be like, it's not mine. But yeah, you know, I often say like, I'm a Grammy accredited singer. But understanding that like, no, that is something that you did. You were on more than half of the album, and realizing that this isn't a choir, it's an ensemble. Like when people think of choirs, you think of, no, these were 16 singers. Four on each part, sometimes two on each part, you know, and individually we had solos on some of those songs where I'm singing by myself. You can hear my voice. So it's like, no, that is something you worked for. You put in time for. Jubilee, you have rehearsals, formal rehearsals twice a week, but you come to rehearsals already knowing your music. So you put in the time, you put in the work, you have a resume, you know? So it took me a lot of time to recognize that and take ownership over it. But I remember when I got the actual certificate with the emblem and like seeing my name on the paper and like going to allcredits.com and just seeing it, it was, for me, it was more of like, that was my keep going. That's all I kept hearing was like, this is only the beginning. Granted, yes, one day I want to receive the actual award, not just a certificate, but understanding the journey and understanding that some people don't even get to touch a certificate. Some people don't even get to say that their name is attached to a Grammy Award winning album, let alone I have a Grammy, you know? So I hate that it took me so long to understand that and recognize it. But again, it's just, I just have so much honor filled and admiration. Yeah.
It sounds like you're humble.
Very much so. Yeah, I'm not used to bragging.
Just take what's yours, take credit.
Yeah.
It sounds like your college experience did like a really good job of preparing you for the professional world of music. But however, there's no experience like what you're going through now. Like that's the real deal. You were there, you were doing it.
Yeah.
There's nothing that would have prepared you for this 100%. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about how it's different now and what you're doing and just how the professionalism and everything.
Yeah.
But you still love the music, but it's different now.
Yeah, very much so. For a while after I graduated, you know, like I said, I was having rehearsals every night, performances every week, sometimes 3-4 times a week. And then after graduating, I come back home and it's like, okay, what do I do? And I, you know, I still sang in church, but that was it. And there was no training that was happening. So for a while, I like longed to be back in a position of creating music with just a group of people or one person. I tried to like find some people, it just never worked out, you know? So I kind of sat and almost let my gift just lay dormant, if you will. And then in 2020, the life-changing year for us all, right? I was stuck at home. So it's like, I'm working from home, but I have nothing to do. I'm not even going to church. I'm not going out with my friend. Everything is closed. What am I doing? And I just started writing. I've always been a writer. I used to write songs all the time, whether or not they were good, but so I just started writing and I actually got connected with another organization called Writing Rounds, which is now ANA Production Group, but also Writing Rounds Community. And it was a community started by both Jessica Haidt and LeBron Arnwine, where we'd sign up for Zoom sessions and you'd get to write with people across the country. Like I've written with people in the Philippines, in the UK and all these things. And I got to meet people and we just bonded over co-writing. And so that kind of opened it up and I ended up writing what was technically my first placement. It's a song called Instrumental and it came out on the Writing Rounds music label. And that was my first, like, yeah, my first placement as a songwriter. And shortly after I joined Writing Rounds, I found Oaktown Soul. And the funny thing about that is I had been following Oaktown Soul on Instagram for like 2 years prior. And I drafted this email to them because I always was like, I really want to just do one song, but I never sent it. And I had seen they had an ad up and they were talking about like, come to the studio, we want to promote you, things of the sort. And so I went in to send them a DM and I actually sent, some maybe not believe it, but I sent the DM on accident. Like I just copy and pasted what I had in the email and put in the DM and I like left and I just pressed send and I literally freaked out. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And Sean, who was the person who responded, the founder, CEO of Oaktown Soul, he responded to me quickly. I was like, yeah, come in. Let's see what you do. So I was like, okay. So I went there. I met them. We had a conversation. They had me sing a little bit. And he was like, we could work with you. And the next week, I went in for a session. And in that session came Pressure, which was my first single ever released. And what was so magical about it was that I wrote it in like less than 30 minutes. I am a quick songwriter. Sometimes it takes me a little time. Like I can't just bust out 10 songs. I could, but you know, I wrote it very quickly. Because I had my background training in like chorale music and choir and things like that, adding harmonies and stacks, it came so easily that they were just like kind of mind blown, you know, and I'm mind blown by you making these great songs, great music. And it was in that session where Sean told me like, you know, you're a producer, right? Or a session after that. It was so shocking to me because no one had ever told me that before. I didn't think, you know, for someone. Yes, I know there are vocal producers, but it's the mindset thing, you know, like I don't make beats. I don't know how to work a MBK. I don't know how to do any of that. But in that moment, he validated me as an artist, as a musician, and as a producer. And from there, we just started like making music, making songs. And I hesitated into stepping into artistry there too, because I came in saying like, I just want one song. I don't know. But they recognized the ability that I had when it came to songwriting. They also recognized that I could do a lot of the things that a lot of people can't. And again, I'm not good at bragging about myself. So anytime they'd be like, can we try this? I'd come right back. Oh yeah, I've done that before. And I'd do it in such a short amount of time. So they were just like, what are you doing with your life? Like, what can we do? So that with the combination of writing, and being at home, I got my own home studio set up. I was in the studio a lot and I just started making music. You know, I was also working through like somewhat of a breakup too. So it just like, it gave me something to do to take my mind off of all the negative things and like focus in on what I wanted. And what happened was that community that I had been longing for, that room of just building, creating, singing, I found it. So yes, 2020 was a lot for a lot of people, a lot of net, but for me, that was a damn good year, honestly. Like, and now I'm here about to release my first EP that was written predominantly like in 2020, you know, and I'm already working on the next one, but it's a very surreal feeling because I now know what I can do. And it's one of those things where it's like, people say the sky is the limit. And it's just like, there's just no limit because we don't know how long the sky goes, you know? And I feel that way now. I can fully say like, no, I'm an artist, but I'm also a songwriter. I can also arrange your music for you. Come in and let me actually vocal produce you. Like, they've given me the opportunity to do each of those things. One of the other owners, Clay Xavier, he was like, what do you want to do today? In one of our first sessions. And I was like, I want to tap back into my acapella roots. So one of the songs is completely acapella. Like, I am the beat. So they give me so much creative space as well. So it's just like being an artist, I now know how to be treated as an artist, how to be respected as an artist, because you think you know these things in your head, but it's almost like when you're building a brand, if you don't tell people how you want to be viewed, they're going to do it for you, you know? And it's the same thing as coming into any of these spaces, know what you're doing, but also welcome instruction and like be open to trusting who you're working with. So this whole experience is very new, but very exciting, and I'm all in.
You're all in now.
Now, yeah.
Overall, it seems like you have a really good team with you overall, because I know that they reached out to me. How the heck they found Jeff's podcast where I talk to podcasters and artists. It's kind of crazy, but you have somebody doing some pretty good legwork for you.
Yeah, they're really amazing. Very much so.
I'm glad they did. And when I said, send me a song, right? Because like, that's the first thing you're going to say, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, send me a song. So they sent me Red Flags, right?
Mm-hmm.
And part of the pitch with Red Flags is this is a song that most can relate to.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, because a lot of people end up with really bad people. And it's not always the most fun thing. But I think both men and women and the non-binary, anybody, we love, when you love someone, you love someone. Or when you care deeply, even if it wasn't love, it may have been lust. We all have those moments where it's just like, I want that person and that person wants me, so I'm going to give my all, but sometimes it's not reciprocated. And so Red Flags is literally that situation. There's a lot of that, like, I met this guy who made me feel, you know, I talked earlier during this podcast about how it took me a minute to actually feel desired by, I like men, so by the male species, it took me a minute. So when I come back home, I finally am owning my sensuality, owning the sexual part of being a woman. And there's this person who wants me and I want them back, but they're not 100% true. They are already in a relationship that they're hiding. So I'm aiding and you cheating, you know? That was not what I wanted to do. I had no idea. But I think a lot of people can relate to that. And God bless those who can't, you know, you dodged a few bullets, but most of us can.
Gotcha. So it's really about those red flags. Like, it's in the title. Like, it's...
Yep.
And even when they're there, like, we don't always see them.
Yep.
That's why it's relatable.
Exactly. Or you choose to ignore them. Like, there were so many opportunities I had to be like, something is not right. And I, in fact, said it. I remember talking to some of my best friends, like, how does this sound to you? Am I tripping? You know, but because for me, everybody's excited that I'm finally getting out there. Because remember, I'm like, I don't want to talk to nobody. I'm good. So they're excited that I'm finally getting out there, but also like, it's okay. It's okay, Dominic, whatever. I'm like, okay. And also me, I'm excited to be out there too. So, and then I also, you know, a lot of people, it's like, they would never do that to me, but you can't assume that other people are going to give you what you give others. So
yeah,
there was also that like obliviousness that I had to me, but yeah, the red flags, we ignore them most times. Ignorance is bliss, right?
Absolutely. I've got two more questions for you.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's say like at the end of the day sort of scenario, right? We always hear that like cheesy saying. So at the end of the day, what is your goal with your music, with your artistry? And then this is an even tougher one. At the end of the day, what does music mean to you?
Whew. Okay. So at the end of the day, the first question, my end goal, honestly, it changes because at first I was just like, I'm good with songwriting. I am okay with being the ghostwriter. I am okay with folks calling me into the big rooms and just, you know, writing. But now my end goal is like, no, I want it all. Like, I want to be the songwriter that y'all call, but I also want to be the vocal producer that you have to call because, you know, no one else can arrange this music and your backgrounds like I can. But I also want to be a well-known artist. Do I want to, and I can't even say the status of those that, but like, I want people to know my name now. You know, I want people to know who Dominae Brashan is. I want people to love my music. I want people to look at me as the artist who is so transparent and so raw that even if I'm not in the mood for her music, I know it's what I need to listen to help me get through the day. That's what I want. And like I said, on the backhand side of things, I want people to look at me as the businesswoman that I am and respect that when I come into a room to write or to produce for you or to arrange these background vocals, you're going to get the best of the best. Because I'm, like I said, I'm always a learner. You know, I'm a teacher, but always a learner. I'm always learning new things, learning how things work. So that's what I want out of my artistry. And that might change again as I continue to step into it. But that is what I want as of right now.
It's realistic now, right? Like, you know, it's realistic now. Like, you're right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then remind me of the other question.
Oh, this is much deeper.
Yeah.
What does music mean to you?
Woo. Everything. And I know it's so cliche, but at one point in my life, I was really depressed. You know, I deal with anxiety, not just social anxiety. Like, I actually, that was the reason I had to start going to therapy some years ago, was because my anxiety got so bad. And I've dealt and dabbled with a little bit of depression. My anxiety is, my therapist actually described it as like lowercase d, big letter A, you know, capital letter A. But there was one point, I say that because there was one point where I was so low and I did not know what to do with myself. I was in a very dark place. My mom didn't know what to do. My family didn't know what to do. And it was just like this dark cloud kind of just hovered over me. And I wasn't as vibrant as I used to be. Like, I wasn't happy. And what brought me out of it was music, you know? And a lot of people will say faith and their trust in God or whatever higher power you believe in, you know? But for me, that's music, right? Because this is a God-given talent that a lot of people have, but some people don't have that specific thing. And I would listen to gospel. I would listen to R&B. I would listen to soul. I would listen to funk. I would listen to Negro spirituals. I would listen to jazz, classical, every genre you can think of. And that is the only thing that would be able to get me up out of my bed in the morning was music. It was not so bad, but it was to the point where I literally, if I wasn't listening to it, I could not sleep because a song was in my head. Like, I'd wake up with a song inside of my head, whether it was a song of encouragement or it was a song that I had to write down. There are so many songs that I could even go back to now in my journals because I could not sleep so bad because the song was playing in my head. And when I hear music, I hear everything. My brain is kind of crazy. Like, I hear what instruments I need to hear, and I hear the whole beat, the whole production. And so music for me is life, you know? That's the reason I'm alive. Music has saved me time and time again. And the first time I experienced that, again, was in college when I was touring with the Jubilee Singers, because that music you're singing, very emotional, very heartfelt. And if I'm feeling so down and out, but I have to perform, the lyrics you sing will bring you to tears. And that's exactly what it did for me. It brought me out of that place that I was in. And I always resort back to it because words are powerful. And when you put instrumentation to it, man.
Beautiful. I love it. This has been an awesome conversation, but I do want to give you a second to talk and tell everybody where to find your stuff, because like you've been saying, you have something really big, big dropping. This is huge. So I want to give you a second to talk about where to find all your awesome stuff.
Absolutely. So every platform, you can search Dominae Brashan and you will find the EP or the album, Nothing Personal. Also, my first two singles, Pressure and Red Flags, all under Dominae Brashan. That is D-O-M-I-N-E. Literally, you put the word do and mine together. There's an accent over my E if you're like, it's not popping up. But every platform you can think of, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, Pandora, all of the platforms, it will be on there. You can also find me on Instagram at dom.onyi, that's dom.onyi. I post a lot of stuff on there too. Anything else, I think TikTok, it's Dominae Brashan. I probably need to change my Twitter handle now because it's it's Niger Gal Dom. I was tapping into my Nigerian roots. So yeah, no, you can, every platform, you can find Nothing Personal out tomorrow, March 4th, 2022. Yeah.
Again, I'm just honored to be able to have this conversation with you. It's been a really great conversation, and I really, really appreciate you having this with me. It's been amazing.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I am, again, both honored and appreciated to be here. Happy to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah, it's been great.
For sure. We'll definitely have to keep in touch.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks for listening and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to listen to the upcoming ones. I'm really trying to do something special here by highlighting all the amazing things all these amazing content creators are doing. I hope you continue to join me on my journey. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. Keep being you. Keep being great.
Because I think we've done a lot in terms of the creators and the independent pod voices. I think we've really expanded a lot. There's still a lot of work to be done for sure. But there's just, it feels to me that there's like, okay, I feel like there's education happening here. I feel that's accessible. I feel there's groups coming up. I feel like we can do this together. There's a sense of togetherness that we're working through. But what I haven't seen change is that top layer.